Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, live from the future, and the future looks bright. No, I'm just kidding, it's just as terrible over here as it is everywhere else. I mean, when you've got a when you've got an ex-criminal banker as your prime minister, which, I don't know, it's kind of like former Marines. There's no such thing as a former Marine, as they say. You're never an ex-criminal banker. Like, oh, I just got over being a criminal and just ripping people off and subverting national dignity and that kind of thing. You know, I just got over it, darling. Don't worry. You know, I'll come in and I'll protect you from people like me. That's the way the world works. Yeah, really? Are you freaking kidding me? This is a Facebook post today about a belief in the government. And it occurs to me that there are still people out there who really do think that the government is looking out for their best interest. And believing that the government has your best interest at heart is delusional, the definition of which is a belief held with strong conviction despite superior evidence to the contrary. Let me cite a few examples from the New Zealand perspective. Cannabis is illegal, despite never having killed anyone. The medical industry is a leading cause of death. The prison system is privatised and can now force prisoners to work. The police kill and assault people all the time, and the only people you can complain to about it are cops at the quote-unquote independent police conduct authority. The New Zealand courts do not require records to be kept by law. We have a mass surveillance state apparatus that's surveilling activists all over the country. State assets are being sold despite public opposition. National debt is higher than ever before by a huge margin. Our leaders lie more often than they tell the truth. Our waters are being opened up to oil exploration, and national parks are being opened up to mining, and Housing New Zealand property is basically being sold for profit and destroying well-established communities, like in Glen Innes. Now, these are just what I can think of in 2 minutes off the top of my head. So go on. Believe the government loves you and never lies, cheats, steals, or kills its own citizens. The only consequence will be that one day, it'll be easier for them to lie to, cheat on, steal from, or kill you. Thank you. And now my very special guests joining me today for the bulk of the broadcast are Randy Moggins from Off Planet Radio. Randy, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Vinny.
Your audio sounds fantastic. And we also have James Martinez there as well. James, welcome.
Hey, welcome. Thank you very much.
All right. Might have to speak a little bit closer into the microphone piece or the whatever it is of the phone there. It's like the little quiet mouse in the house back there. Okay, so we have an interesting topic today about understanding the cabal, all their various machinations and what have you. And James, I gather, has been doing quite a lot of work on it. And Randy, you were the one who introduced me to him. Would you like to explain why?
Yeah, real simply, and my role here is real simply just to introduce to you and to your audience James Martinez. Although he is a talk show host who has worked out in Los Angeles, he's a host of a show called Cash Flow, emanating out of L.A. on Achieve Radio. He's also been on Republic Broadcasting Network, for which we have forgiven him, and he has worked largely behind the scenes as a liaison and advocate for alternative energy, specifically cold fusion. He was he has been associated with the Freedom of Thought Foundation, working with people like the late Walter Boert, who was the author of Operation Mind Control, the epic book which exposed MK Ultra during the Vietnam War. And he's also worked with Fletcher Prouty, the author of The Secret Team, and Colonel Thomas Bearden, who's the author of the Excalibur Briefing, working in the background as well on the financial situation, or what we've dubbed the global financial revaluation. James has largely been a liaison for what we're going to talk about tonight, which is the release of materials by Michael C. Cottrell relating to the George H.W. Bush crime family and their associated syndicates and their suppression of funds being released to enable the United States and hence the other global economies around the planet to go on to a gold standard again, thus taking us out of toxic debt currencies. And so this is what James has been working on. He is the direct source for the documents that are posted on his website at jamesmartinezmedia.net.
James, care to follow on?
Hello there. Hello there.
You're coming through loud and clear, buddy. Go ahead
All
and
right,
tell us
good.
A little bit about these Cottrell documents. No relation, I presume, to the criminally bad acting of Kim Cottrell.
No. They're two separate universes and completely, totally different.
Okay, my bad.
No problem. I would say, for the listener that's going to hear this, some people may be listening to it live, some people are going to be listening to it later. This is going to be part of the historical record for some things that I'm going to announce here that are in tangent with the documents that some of which I will read off tonight as they came to me from Michael Cottrell and his law firm, which is actually in Southern California area. But let me preface by saying this, that if people are unfamiliar with the story here, I would suggest that they go to christopherstory.org and they review who he was as far as one of the people behind the scenes that I only until as of late, in the last month, I realized the magnitude of and depth of his research and what he did is set the tone for what we're seeing is the biggest showdown, financial showdown in history. And Christopher Story was, I would say, was kind of a whistleblower of the criminal elements of government that control the what we call the transaction from point A to point B for goods and services or whatever, the medium of exchange. Even though that medium of exchange now is completely, totally different because it's been electrocuted, and when you have electrocution in accounting systems where money and finance are related, there's distortions, and money as a medium is now being turned into something completely new, as which I'll get into and explain as we go along here. But first, I would ask the audience to go to christopherstory.org, and then they will see within the context of those reports, prior, before Christopher Story's death, is his relationship with Michael Cottrell. Now, once somebody's done that, then I would suggest they go to Michael Cottrell's personal blog to see the trail of documents associated with the story about how the attempted takeover of the United States has been going on right now, and how it's being behind the scenes, very behind the scenes, because there's virtually no press coverage on any of this at all, and how that is being facilitated, and what has happened thus far, and what's going on behind the scenes in terms of issuing and also changing the entire global economy and restructuring it to fair game without the Federal Reserve. That's what this is about, and that's what these documents go into. Is that pretty clear thus far?
Yeah, absolutely. By all means, proceed.
Okay, so what I would say is, let me say how I met Christopher Story first. Christopher Story, I found out, as many people have found out about him, while I was suing the credit card companies. I was suing the credit card companies in getting people out of debt, both in credit cards, signature loans, student loans, and mortgages. I was with the original people that started this in the United States and started the debt industry, the collection of debt industry. But we were doing it for the public. So that if somebody would come to me, they would come to me with a certain amount of alleged debt, and I would tell them how to go through the court system and how to get out of it, and prove to them and educate them not only what was going on and how they got involved in put themselves into that position, but how to get themselves out of it. And one of the things I discovered, because I was studying the effects of currency on finance, and most of all, the debt instrument of the credit card and the technology of it. And one of the things I discovered is that there's a complete, total absolute mental breakdown of the understanding of a person that's issued a credit card. And one of the functions of that is the acceleration of debt by completely nobody even understanding the contract. But that wasn't the main issue that I put out. The main issue I put out, which Christopher Story picked up on and how I started my relationship with him, was telling him, I said, I've read a lot of your work, but you put nothing in there about the effect of the hypothecation of money in your work. Am I missing something? And then I told him what I was doing, and I started exchanging emails with him and started reading some of his work and what he was involved with about the plan to do a complete global takedown and put us into a situation of this new world order. So it was from that relationship that I was introduced to Michael Cottrell, and I started speaking to him many years ago. Great guy, doesn't speak to the press at all. Then, this is a good lead-up to the documents, but recently, when I was communicating with him, he said, well, did you look into the book Christopher Story wrote called The New Underworld? The new world underworld, basically. And it's about 750 pages long. And within the context of the work that he provided and research that he provided, he completely, totally managed to include something that I was involved with, and that's the exposure of behavior modification and torture on humans that was financed by international banks. Sanctioned, financed, covered up, paid off by all the biggest banks in the world. And that was one of the things I brought to when I first started going public. And then I discovered that he knew about that and that he was actually got some of his research from my former business colleague, who's now not with us, Walter Bowert, when he wrote the book Operation Mind Control. So it was in the context of Operation Mind Control and the exposure of human trafficking, behavior modification on military soldiers and civilians, that we started discovering what the banks are really doing, what they're really financing, and the fact that they've played the biggest hand and con job that we've ever seen in the history of history with money. Here comes Michael Cottrell, an associate of Christopher Story, who happened to be on the ground floor of the reconstruction of the global economy. And this has been... now. I might add that Mr. Cottrell has posted these documents and continues to post documents with his attorney, and these are legal filed affidavits from him that he goes through with his attorney before he goes public with them. Now, I might add as well that I got an email from him last night, and even though I'm going to read these documents verbatim, he mentioned to me that in the context of delivering it to an audience such as yours, as we're going to be doing tonight, that he needs to create a kind of a primer of such, so people could understand from the root how this whole mess has started and what the real game plan is, and why that most of this is not even covered on some of the biggest radio networks in America or the world at all. In fact, I was the first person actually... when I was on the radio, he contacted me because he decided he wanted to be interviewed. And I told my producer, I said, listen, Michael Cottrell's agreed to speak. And then he happened to cancel before he came on, which is perfectly fine for me. I wasn't hurt by the issue. But what was interesting is my producer called me that evening and said, your traffic level went through the roof tonight with this gentleman coming on. So I knew that there was something going on with him, and having spoken with him for a long period of time, I feel that his story and what he's doing needs to be publicized, which is why I agreed to do this. I did it the first round of this I did with on Randy's broadcast. I think it was a week ago, maybe a little bit longer. So that's where this is coming from. Now, these were given to me, and I'm going to read them verbatim, because some of the information that I put forth and posted on jamesmartinezmedia.net, he wanted to correct, in fact. So he knows, he's listening, he knows I'm going to be doing this evening. I talked with him this afternoon about doing it, so I'm going to read verbatim And I can stop, and if you have any questions for me or my opinions, I'm keeping it because what I want to do is let the documents speak for themselves. I don't want to hypothesize unless we're specifically saying that we're hypothesizing, and let the documents speak for themselves. Now, this is an affidavit that he filed. So that means if he's under oath in a court of law on the world court, which is where this would be his testimony. And he states in number one, this affiant affirmation was electronically diverted from the computer server of attorney A. Clifton Hodges by the NSA to Fort Meade, and any communication between this affiant and attorney Hodges was continuously blocked for several hours so that Bush Sr., Mr. Cheney, could see for themselves what this affiant was sending, according to Interpol teams monitoring my communication. Because what has happened is, and this has been he's told me this many times, is that they've gone in and because they're monitoring him constantly, that they go in and actually screw around with his data on a sometimes basis. I don't talk to him consistently on a consistent level, but this is what happened. The second part of his clause is, my intent of this and previous affirmation is not to claim any funds due to Mr. Leo Wanta, nor to Lindell Bonney Sr., but to affirm the facts and evidence that funds, companies, and or trusts have been stolen under the direct or indirect control of George Bush Sr. by the Bush-Clinton Federal Reserve cabal, and that thefts must be addressed. Now, I might add, and this is an important thing to say, that Homeland Security was financed by stolen funds. Okay? And he goes into these documents when people, your audience or yourself, go online and they look into his documents. He clearly states that. And number three, this affiant would not spit for said funds of either due to the deals, methods, and means used to obtain said funds. Number four, that additionally, since it is a fact that this affiant securities company, Niagara Securities, established in January 1990, was found to have held illegally and without this affiant's knowledge or authority over $300 trillion fiat dollars, gained as a result of sales of the United States Treasuries to the Soviet Union satellite countries' central banks after the fall of the Berlin Wall. Number five, this affiant will receive a substantial portion of said funds in the form of gold asset-backed U.S. Treasury notes as compensation in the form of fines, interest, and penalties at the direction of the Basel Group List, Gold Treaty, and Moscow Agreements. Number six, the important point of this affirmation is, what kind of central bank financial system do Mr. Leo Wanta and Bonney intend to fund, as opposed to the total transparent banking system answerable to the rule of law as presented by Basel III and the Gold Treaty, which provides for no central bank system. Number seven, that between October 14, 2007 and November 22, 2007, this affiant was in the constant company of Mr. Leo Wanta from Erie, Pennsylvania to Alexandria, Virginia to Staten Island and New York City and back to Erie, Pennsylvania at the affiant's expense. That during the entire time this affiant was subjected to numerous lessons by Mr. Leo Wanta, that we are above the law and we can do anything. Number nine, this affiant maintained that I was definitely subject to the oath taken in August of 1970 in the U.S. Navy, 1933 and 1934 securities regulations and the U.S. statutes as well as the Pennsylvania laws. This led to three scamming matches between this affiant and Mr. Wanta. Number 10, that contrary to the financial gurus that believe that SDR fiat U.S. central bank system will save the day when Mr. Wanta and Bonney fund it, instead they will capitalize, quote, Operation Stillpoint, referenced in closure number 7, an operation which has destroyed all legitimate banking in the Western world and Japan with the $1,500 quadrillion U.S. dollars fiat derivative-based bonds, notes, and stocks. By changing debt to legal tender, a.k.a. derivatives, and eliminating the U.S. banking system with a system of Treasury direct accounts only. Number 11, that charges have been made, that this affiant is a thief and is a usurper who only wants to claim the money's due to Mrs. Wanta and Bonnie, actually identifies the real reason for this allegation and the ensuing 23rd March letter of termination this affiant received. Number 12, that between December 2007 and March 2008, Mr. Wanta was taken to the White House for a meeting with George Bush Sr., George Bush, where the pay orders and other documents regarding the dispersal of funds from the Ameritrust Group were reviewed, with the resultant that Mr. Steve Hadley and Mr. John Hammond and the Bushes decided that this affiant should be, quote, dumped as Ameritrust Group into a treasurer since Mr. Cottrell was observed as, quote, too powerful an ambassador. Wanta, Leo Wanta role was not observed as equal pertaining to the 500 billion U.S. funds necessary to initiate an international financial investment contract. Number 13, that on March 2008, this affiant was affirmed that the ambassador was required to, quote, place his own people as the new overall treasurer of Ameritrust Group since Mr. Cottrell will be too busy doing those functions mandated by the National Security Agency and would not be able to do day-to-day operations. That Mr. Christopher Story questioned this, quote, requirement and the necessary changes to the Wanta plan and the role of this affiant. Mr. Story and this affiant were concerned of the lack of oversight, rule of law, and adherence to the 1933 and 1934 securities regulations per the Morgan Stanley account established by this affiant as signature for the securities account within the Morgan Stanley in the name of Ameritrust Group and the liability this affiant could face to any breach of these security regulations. Number 15, that the joint venture between Michael Cottrell, Ameritrust Group, and Pennsylvania Investments specifically defines that the affiant would be the signature for such security accounts and operations due to the fact that Ambassador Leo Wanta was still a felon in the state of Wisconsin and could not sign for the U.S. security account to any U.S. life and security, broker, or dealer. Number 16, that since the Wanta plan was penned by Mr. Christopher after meeting with his affiant during the 15th and 16th of March 2006, and that the term was based on the above-referenced joint venture and the massive size of the Wanta settlement, this affiant has decided to acquire an oversight panel or judge to ensure the proper and transparent expenditure and investment of the funds as said funds were dispersed to the Morgan Stanley securities account per instructions given by both Ambassador Leo Wanta and the affiant. That additionally, Mr. Wanta required this affiant to sign documents to allow the substantial amount of said settlement funds, approximately $20 trillion, to be transferred to the Snake Hill National Bank in Australia, thereby giving the chairman of said bank, Ambassador Leo Wanta, full and unfettered authority as placement in use. That this affiant stated absolutely, quote, no to the requirement of the NSA requirement to sign the National Security Act of 1947, which would preclude any transfer regarding these and other activities, thereby abandoning rule of law. 19, that this affiant was informed by Mr. William Bonney Sr. on July 12, 2008, that the Wanta plan would be fully funded and the Pennsylvania Investments Incorporated, that this affiant would be involved with the Pennsylvania Investments Incorporated securities account at Morgan Stanley, would not be allowed to receive the $500 billion deposit per the joint venture agreement with Ameritrust Group. That by Ambassador Wanta's actions and deeds completely discarded the rule of law for the continuous abeyance of the quarters orders of George Bush Sr., George Bush, and the National Security Agency. That at this point, both Christopher Story and the affiant decided to appeal to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II and the Duke of Edinburgh to secure a $6.2 trillion U.S. dollar loan to facilitate the U.S. dollar refunding project. A letter of introduction was written by Christopher Story that regarding this affiant that accompanied the second attempt to deliver the affidavits and loan requests to Her Majesty and His Royal Highness, the Duke of Edinburgh, via attorney Clifton Hodges and Christopher Story, that the so-called Wanta plan, after the affiant's termination, had become the continuation of Operation Steel Point and the Alabama Toll Facilities Project. That these proposed plans, overseen by the NSA and White House, project the employment 12,000 to 14,000 people with full medical benefits, new equipment. However, the company's planning organization and funding controlled by the National Security Agency, the White House, Ambassador Leo Wanta, without the rule of law. that the Marvelous Investment Limited, Parkhead Financial, Ameritrust Group, Michael Cottrell, and the name Republic are all owned and operated by the felon Ambassador Leo Wanta and reports to George Bush Sr. that the so-called Wanta Plan format will build infrastructure throughout the south of the United States, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, and Mississippi, with toll facilities on each road, with the profits funneled to the NSA, George Bush Sr., just like the stock security shortening schemes that have damaged companies like CMKM and hundreds of others, that the proposed Alabama toll facilities incorporated project was a scam, and the funding by Delmarva Timber Trust was one of the victims of the Bush-Clinton Federal Reserve NSA rats gang. And here's the important part comes up here, is this is the reason why the global reset has not occurred is because of this crap that's going on behind the scenes. I'll read this verbatim, number 27, that without the rule of law and transparency, the, quote, so-called Wanta Plan will only lead to another financial crisis involving the fiat derivative system of central banks issuing non-money, which will leave the Republic of the United States of America destitute and under the dictatorship of these rats. And finally, that as a result of this and other Aragonist criminal activity, the People's Republic of China and the Russian Federation, along with 200-plus countries that have signed the, quote, gold treaty, have specified that no funds will be released, accessed, e.g. economic receipt, via currency revaluation, or penalties and redress of theft until the initial step of the treaty and the Moscow agreements have been met, i.e. the delivery of the codes and funds to Michael C. Cottrell, BSMS, for the funding of the new Treasury of the Republic of the United States of America. There you go.
So I thought about a great protest sign while you're saying that is go out in the streets with a big sign that says we don't want a Wanta plan. And
yeah, exactly.
What this basically says to me, if I can see if I can encapsulate it both for myself and the audience, is that the NSA, highly connected U.S. officials have been and ambassadors, etc., have come together to create basically a money laundering scheme where they take astronomical amounts of money at a loan, promising to build infrastructure, and then basically don't build it and just use it for black ops. Is that what's going on here?
In a nutshell, and that's a good response. That's an important response to look into for people that are listening, because that was the first time you probably heard that, and how you respond is an important feedback for not only the public to hear, but the people that are listening right now to this, that are doing this.
Well, see, for me, this is simply par for the course. I mean, this is merely one element of thousands of others that have the exact same game plan. They used to do it with large quantities of drugs and things of that nature in order to launder their money to get it in. But are you saying that this goes on simultaneously as an alternate source of funding, more for the NSA projects rather than the CIA? Because I know you were talking about Bush Sr. there, who is a former head of the CIA.
Okay, now here's where that is correct. But here's the important part that I know is going on that is going to affect how this rolls out, because I'm not in total agreement that if these funds are released and Michael Cottrell suddenly starts to fix the Republic of the United States and things are funded and get back in balance and there's full transparency and so forth, that we're going to have an economy that people can understand. Because that's not the case now that we have cryptocurrencies and we're using digital transactions and there's new types of currencies that are going into action now. And the most important part is, and here's the kicker, This is all happening. Well, the G8 and the G20 and all these countries came together, decide, okay, we're going to have to fix the global economy here, or else we got a big problem. But none of them included or even thought of the fact that where we're at in our evolutionary arrival of free energy, otherwise known as LENR, or cold fusion, and what that is going to do to the, quote, concept of medium exchange and a concept that all of us have been trained into, the idea of scarcity. which gold as a backing of a currency, while that's historically been the level playing field for everybody that kept inflation down, now we're in a situation where I'm involved with this. I've had meetings with governments. I know exactly the trade commissions that are being set up for this. I know which companies are involved. Now, the introduction of free energy into the global economy, I'm sorry, but it's over for money, or the way people think money is going to be in the future. And this is going to affect people very soon, because this technology is going to be released. And the moment you have cold fusion running your house, Vinny, now you have to question as to whether or not the company that gave that to you, and the source of your power coming into your house that will run your house, can we legislate the power of the sun and charge you for it? Because now we're in a situation
I would say that technically, yes, you can. Whether or not it's logical or will prevent tyranny in some way, I'm not 100% sure. And also, the entire premise behind this mega borrowing of which you're speaking, I've also never quite understood the logic of borrowing your country into prosperity.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't work. Most people that I've dealt with that have come to me at some point with massive amounts of debt, they followed all the rules they were told, but they didn't read anything and they didn't read any contracts, and they put themselves in this position. And when they find out how money really works, they really didn't know anything. And I'm talking about people that came to me, the big-time professionals. I had somebody from the State Department come to me with $350,000 of credit card debt and ask me to get him out of it. And it's amazing the level of total, complete ignorance that I can speak for sure in the United States, that the people here are basically somnambulistic, sleepwalking morons,
James,
that have no idea what's happened here.
Can I ask you something? Does it really come as a surprise to you? Because it's not like the banks sit you down when you get your credit card and say, hey, by the way, we're creating this out of nothing and it doesn't really exist, and you don't really have to pay it off if you knew how properly. I mean,
right.
I mean, the key to organized crime is keeping a low profile, so that basically anybody who says there's a mafia, gets called a conspiracy theorist and is just disbelieved automatically. If in the context of history, this is not amazing nor surprising, it's more or less the norm.
Yeah, right. It what's happened, what I've seen, the kind of new era of change that started now, is that I'm involved in three banks that are doing digital currency gold-backed. One is run by the state of Utah, and I'm on the board of directors of the United Precious Metal Association there. And that state, and many people in the state of Utah, they're past this. They're not even using the dollar anymore. They gave up on that. They're taking their paychecks, putting it into a system that's transferred into gold units. They pay off they pay their merchants that way. And you can go to a restaurant and you can pay for gold there. And you should see the reaction to somebody when they receive a payment for gold, and they understand what's going on. It's a completely, totally different response. Because most people are completely cut off from the money they're spending anyway, and they're completely disassociated, because the days of holding cash in your hand, that kinesthetic feeling of holding something in your hand, has completely, totally been vaporized.
I've spoken to a Wall Street guy, Tom Filer, as an associate of Lindsay Williams, and I asked him how much gold is actually in circulation versus the amount of gold on paper that's in circulation, and he says it's basically like a 9-10 ratio.
Mm-hmm.
That 90% of the gold in circulation is just made up, it doesn't exist.
Right. I would agree with that, in the sense that when you have virtual currencies, you're never going to be able to have proper accounting, ever. It's impossible. This is one of the effects of doing information at light speed and doing economies at light speed. That's what killed money. People don't realize it yet, but in the future, money will be vaporized in many ways. It already has from things like Bitcoin and stuff like that. It's changing as we speak. And the reason I say that is because I am meeting and talking, discussing with people daily about how the ethics of deployment of free energy and how that is going to be economically structured and who's going to oversee it, and are we going to let a bunch of scumbags determine the moral focal point of that, or should it be you and me, the public, and that really we, the attitude of the people that are going to, if they're going to rise above this, is in the hands of the public. It's really going to have to, this transition point is where people are going to have to make their moral decision.
Well, we would be looking at an entirely new economy, because if you explain the economics of free energy, it seems like an oxymoron at first sight, does it not?
Absolutely. In fact, I talk with lawyers that are in the commercialization process of it, and these are like accomplished lawyers, and I tell them over the phone, I said, you're making this up. Don't lie to me over the phone and tell me that you're roughing proper code within the Universal Commercial Code about free energy. You don't even know what it is. How are you supposed to legislate it? And this is because, you know, the natural affinity is for people to walk backwards into their future and then try and find out where the present is and then use what they've known in the past to fix and insert what's going on in the present. Since this has happened now, and this is going on, they don't know what the hell they're doing. And I've met with the biggest, most reputable financial newspaper, Financial Times of London, in London, and debriefed this on this matter. And they just stared at me. They didn't even know what to say. They know I'm telling the truth. They don't know how to word it. They don't know what to say about it. This is not being talked about by anybody at all yet, except those people that have a hands-on involvement of the deployment of this. It's a really, and it's a beautiful time, actually. It's a beautiful time because this is going to be the thing that decentralizes power network groups that have tried to take control of everything. It's over for them. This cabal and the whole thing that they're trying to do, it will fail horribly, horribly.
My question is just how many of us are they going to take with them? Because I think about this kind of mindset of if I can't have it, nobody can. And what happens to a vicious, infested dog when you back it into a corner? And also, sure. I also wonder about the concept of trying to go to people who are currently part of the hierarchical establishments and what qualification they have in order to solve our current crisis. Have they been taught throughout their lives to think, problem solve, and create, or have they been trained to repeat and follow rules, regardless of how foolish the rule appears to be?
Correct. Those leaders are not leaders, they're misleaders. And that's what's happened. We've got a complete, total breakdown of, in the United States, and this is no news to you, that got the lowest approval rating for any president in the history of history, got the lowest approval rating of Congress, got the lowest approval rating of the House of Representatives, got the lowest approval rating of anything. You got mainstream news is being totally outcasted, losing their entire audience daily. So there is a shift happening here. But it's slow and people don't know what's coming next, so there's a tremendous amount of anxiety.
I was having an argument just before the show about the state and the banking cartels and things of that nature, and we both agree that there is currently an incestuous relationship between them. And the argument was whether or not we should prioritize decentralizing the power of government and taking away that monopoly of force which is given to the bankers. And my argument is that as long as private central bankers are capable of issuing the public currency out of nothing and never printing the interest on that debt, it doesn't really matter how much power the state has, because all real assets will, over time, wind up in the hands of the bankers. What would you say? Would you say that that's a correct assessment on my part, or would you say it's the state?
Yeah, no, look, behind every law, behind every financial transaction, behind all of that is a person. Well, soon probably would be robots, but we still have people running everything right now. And those people, our leaders, are the bankers. They have value systems inwardly, inside them. Now, I've already mentioned this to Randy and a couple of other people. After, you and I discussing this, I come to the conclusion, and people agree with me most of the time, that integrity, that's the currency. Consumer confidence, that's the currency. Transparency, that's the currency. Because if you have that, and the only thing, when you align that and get into the agreement frame of those elements inwardly as a value, then you can lead, if necessary, a city, a town, a country. But that doesn't exist anymore.
Well, this would kind of achieve the opposite society of what we currently have, where psychopaths have nothing and good people have everything. Randy Morgans, you wanted to jump in here?
Yeah, I think it's important to underscore here that we need to break the major premise that somehow governments and corporations are separate entities. We don't have sovereign governments on this planet presently, at least not within first world and second world nations. So basically what we have is hybridized forms of government that are in fact corporatocracies. This is a fascistic system. And most of the public thinks that government is somehow or another disposed to protecting their so-called citizens. The citizens need to realize that they're dealing with corporate entities, and law itself has to be reasserted along the lines of addressing a fascistic system. Because right now, we think that governments and corporations are separate entities. They're not. They're all corporations. And we have to readdress that thinking. We have to break the cognitive dissonance that people go through when they look at government, when they look at corporations. I actually think that what is outlined in the papers that Mr. Cottrell has submitted to the public, if they read through them, and this is tedious for most people, they don't want to read legalese, they don't want to look at documents that are affidavits entered into testimony. But the fact of the matter is, you have to draw the lines and connect the dots and understand that what we now have is a complete display of the corruption that's been created as a result of allowing our governments to be run by corporations.
It's kind of like an entanglement scenario, and I was talking about this earlier today as well, is how exactly could you release this this many-headed hydra from the control of it? Because in terms of the banking cartel's influence, it's virtually total. Nearly every hierarchical structure in the entire planet with any notable influence or power has already been taken over or corrupted or is in the process.
Money is their bloodstream. When you break that major premise, you then begin to break down their system. When people no longer look to external sources for power of currency, when currency itself is revalued back to something understandable by the common person, then we begin to have a manageable economy again from the cognitive side of it. And we also bring into alignment so-called public servants, because they no longer have a trough to feed from. Inflated economies are the result of exactly what you said earlier, Vinny. There's no money there to pay the debt. It is perpetual debt. It is slavery. It is servitude. It is abuse of mind control on a global scale.
I tend to agree. The thing about this is, and what I was trying to get at, is that we've had countries that have tried to break away from the system, such as Iceland, and yet it's been in the news not too recently, I think, that the bankers are back in and they're back in control again. And this seems to me like the entire planet, every single country in some way, shape or form, is bound down. And unless the shackles are released off of all countries simultaneously, such as the power of the global bankers, that they will be able to use whatever weapons at their disposal, be they military invasion, intelligence community subversion, assassination, or simply economic warfare, economic terrorism, in order to prevent that country from being released from their grasp, and if they did get released from their grasp in the first place, to bring them back into the fold. And this occurs to me to be the crux of the issue here. How can you simultaneously free countries from the grasp of the bankers?
That's a good point. It's a very good point, and I'm glad that you asked that question, because When having been involved with all this for a long time, and I'm more a solution-orientated thing rather than going back and replaying the same record over and over again about how the finances work and who's doing it, I prefer to point my perception to the solution of what that is. And dialogue is part of the solution. But the only way out is in on this deal. The only way out is in. And until people invert their perception inward and take a close look at how they're getting their information, who's providing the information, how their entire perceptual system has been hijacked, basically. The news is kinesthetic now. You touch it every morning, every day. That's how they get their news. There's a direct correlation between their index finger and news coming from the north, east, west, and south. They've managed to hijack people's attention span, hijack their value system, and invert them to the point that they're almost see themselves as vaporizing, vanishing almost, so that we have a reactive public that is forced to constant need for media validation. You're in a state of anxiety, expectation with your next text that you may receive, communication same. So what I'm saying is that the human navigation system and how we deal with each other, including how we deal with our money, all of that stuff is being manipulated for a long time by a lot of brilliant people, and the people walked right into the trap, and they didn't even know what happened. And I used to, when I was discussing alleged debt, I always call it alleged debt on the radio, that the people on the other end who were in the debt, who got there, my main thing was them, is I'd always ask them, I said, did you read the contract when you signed it to get your credit card? And nobody ever said yes. And I was kind of like, that is the weirdest phenomena I've ever heard. Nobody would go do business with somebody today without making sure that the person they're doing business with, they're in agreement of what they're going to do for each other before they do business, but not with money. And how did that happen? How did people get so disassociated to that? To completely believe that they were going to be issued a line of 10,000 credit with their signature for some, like they deserved it, and didn't think they were going to have to pay 30, 40, 50 times that amount on the way out, and that whole slavery issue. But, lo and behold, nobody reads that. They don't. So, you got people like Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's running for president, who I dealt with her office a long time ago, and was explaining the behavioral problem of electricity and credit cards, and the whole thing sucks, and all it is a system to enslave people and also control the perceptual process having to do with value. Because people don't even know when they use their credit card and whether they're using an ATM card or using something like that, that what is, they're not calculating, and their value system inwardly, it's almost cut off, it's almost disassociated. It's an unusual, because I talked to shrinks about this, because I was the only person that compiled a behavioral archive of people in debt. The only one who did it. And then tried to modify that so people could alter inwardly so they can understand what real value is. Because that's what it really comes down to. I don't care who's going to deliver gold-backed currencies. I don't care how cold fusion's coming out. The real value is the value of each other.
I think that's a good point. And I was discussing with somebody about how, like 9/11 occurred, for example, and they say, "Oh, well, the intelligence apparatus were just dumb that day," you know. Like, oh, you should never try to explain things that are, you know... Oh, excuse me. I've just had a total brain fart right there. You can't really explain things in terms of conspiracy. And what you should instead is explain everything with stupidity. Okay? Like, oh all this stuff happened. Right. All this stuff happened. Oh, no, they were just dumb. Right. They were just dumb. You know, it's like, I suppose you think there's no such thing as evil people who are intelligent. That everything that goes wrong in society is the direct result of stupidity alone, and humanity just got over the lust for power, control, and domination of others. In my movement, we have a word for people who think like that. It's called a coincidence theorist.
Good. Good one. Very good.
You know, and if anything, you're saying, oh, everybody else is stupid. Well, actually, look in the mirror, son. See? See that reflection right there? That's the stupid guy.
Right. Absolutely. I don't doubt that for a second. I read the user's illusion. I know what that means.
Unfortunately.
The map is not the territory.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have come to the break. First hour is over. Ladies and gentlemen, please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and donate today or sign up for a regular donation. And bear in mind that Freedom Slips is also a listener-supported network. So if you don't just listen to my show and you listen to a whole bunch, consider giving some to the network as well at FreedomSlips.com. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand. The fabulous, the fluoridated, the irradiated. Thank you, Fukushima. You're the Shiite Muslim. And my very special guests, also joining me from the irradiated Northern Hemisphere, are James Martinez and Randy Moggins. Welcome back, guys. Now, I was discussing earlier about, you know, the concept of evil and this sort of ability people have to excuse everything with stupidity and accident and things of that nature. And one of the arguments that's surfacing is about the government's use of force, right? And how that's, again, a pretty bad thing, obviously. However, it's kind of not quite as bad as the bankers being in control of your government that uses the monopoly of force. You see what I'm saying? It's a one-step, two-step program. And let's take war, for example. Can you name me any major war where the bankers didn't finance both freaking sides of it? No? Well, in that case, they seem to have a monopoly of force, don't they? Because it means a war don't happen unless they will it. Isn't it? Am I wrong? Can somebody, like, I don't know, try and correct me on this, you know? Has brain spasms and mind control been around for so long that it's just worked its magical spell on everybody so fantastically? I'd probably say it has. The elder generations as well as the youngers. Many of the elders of our world did not grow up with the sophisticated control mechanisms that we have in place today. But it's not as though the less sophisticated mechanisms of their day weren't effective. It's just that government propaganda and yellow journalism has now been replaced by American Idol and Xbox. The effect is that people today don't just know the wrong thing, they simply don't know anything at all. It's a systemic paralysis of the mind.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, we talk about cognitive dissonance, that's really what it is, and it's mind control. It's human laziness intellectually. And I think one of the things I want to draw back to as we go into the second hour again, for those of your listeners, because your listeners are exceptional people. They listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. They listen to Freedom Slips. And I want them to understand that this requires a little bit of rigor and understanding what's going on here. The documents that have been released by Michael Cottrell on JamesMartinezMedia.net are documents that require you to sit down and connect a few dots. It's not being put out for you in blurbs and brief synopsis. The idea of these documents is if you read them, you will understand the level of evil that has been part of not just the United States government, but governments across the world. I told you when I introduced this subject to you, that was a prelude to this show, that somewhere in all of this, it intersects with John Key in New Zealand because it intersects with every leader in the world. When you begin to understand that George H.W. Bush has engineered through his crime syndicate the theft of funds that belong to private citizens, that they have used these funds to finance government operations off budget, then you begin to get the bigger picture. This helps to break down some of the confusion about what's really going on. The other side of this is, Vinny, that there is a disinformation war going on the internet. We're not the only ones talking about these funds, about Leo Wanta, and about what occurred going back into the 1980s when President Reagan basically commissioned Leo Wanta to go out and trade Russian rubles as a profitable way to break the Soviet Union, a mission that he succeeded at.
One might call that an act of rebellion.
It is an act of rebellion, of course. But the intricacy of the plot is that, in a way, he was financing a backdoor through which we could escape, and it requires honor. So you have to look at the documents, and you have to decide who's behaving honorably and who are the criminals.
And today that's even harder to see, and it's all, again, I hate to keep laboring the point for people, but it really is all too easy to think evil men are stupid. But the scary truth is they're often smarter than you are. And they use your own sense of morality against you, because you'd never do such a thing. You assume no one ever could. It's a nice thought, but it's simply not true.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mentioned this to somebody in Los Angeles. I met with another reporter in Los Angeles, and I said, you know what? I said, the reason all these guys have gotten away with all this and there's so much corruption is that good people just don't think like that. They don't even presume. It's not in part of their value system in their interior to think in the ways that the people, they're doing so much corruption and there's no rule of law going on. They don't even, it doesn't even scratch the surface and it doesn't even become an issue. Because I always wondered, when I was recently in Europe, when I was in England, I go to any newsstand, and 80% of the time, most of the covers of the papers were covered, having subject matter covering all the pedophilia that's going on all over the country every week. And I would see people wouldn't even react to it. They wouldn't even react to it. They didn't even know how to respond. It's really a strange situation that we're in when people are so disassociated and cut off.
Well, if we're all divided and conquered and you know, you're angry at somebody because they're black or they're Hispanic or something of that nature, you seem to be less angry at the criminal scum that run your country, and that's kind of the idea. And Randy, you talked about the disinformation campaign, and recent articles have actually come out that there are indeed offices in DC that are full of Israeli agents who full-time just go on the internet pushing propaganda and stuff, you know, full-time. The internet's like an information battleground, and it becomes actually, it's not easy to discern fact from fiction anymore, especially when there's so many freaking lies, because it takes quantitatively more work to disprove a lie than it is to just come up with the lie itself, right?
I tell you,
it took me a second, and in order to prove that it's BS, it'll take you a week.
Well, if you go on the internet right now, if you search Michael C. Cottrell, if you search Leo Wanta, the top article on the search for Michael C. Cottrell is in fact a disinformation piece written by a paid, I will say, based on my experience, NSA stooge. And the article basically debunks who Michael C. Cottrell is and what Leo Wanta did. If you read the article, what you find is that it's strung together basically a lot of abstract facts, with, in fact, the article itself offering no substance at all. The alternative to that is to do what Mr. Cottrell has done. He has offered an abundance of substance. He's legally executed documents, affidavits, which are greater than or superior to a testimony under oath in a courtroom, that state all the relationships that occurred between Leo Wanta, between Christopher Story, between Mr. Cottrell, between the different corporations, and the activities of the other side of the equation, which basically is the government that we have had in place, at least we'll say optimistically, since 1992 in the United States. The actual climb of the, quote, New World Order, as George H.W. Bush stated in 1991, on September 11th, by the way, in front of the UN.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave. A tangled web indeed.
Yeah.
Hey, and just recently there were two articles that came out that I was having a look at, and first one was that 1% holds half the world's wealth, is in the Business New Zealand Herald, and there's a quote in there from Lynn Forrester de Rothschild, chief executive of E.L. Rothschild. She said, "Extreme inequality undermines economic growth and it threatens the private sector's bottom line." Well, she'd frickin' know, wouldn't she?
There is no private... Well, you could either say there is no private sector or it's all private sector, and I would say that probably the latter is true. Well, there is no public sector. It's all private. Mm. The laws are all private, the money's all private, and everything's been stolen.
Yeah. And then, incidentally, the next article goes on, Davos 2015, to focus on wealth gap, and this is about the Prime Minister John Key tackling economic inequality. This is a man who's worth a minimum $50 million, not including all his blind trusts that are carted away from public view. He's expected to help us bridge this inequality gap. Now, would you hire an assassin to bring down the murder rate? You know, does that make a whole lot of sense to you? You've got to be freaking kidding right. me. You can't make this stuff up, folks.
Yeah. Incredible. It baffles my mind from day to day, participating in anything news related and what they're saying in California, especially in Southern California, where it's like a complete, total different type of jungle down here. Where
can you try speaking up there, James?
Yeah, the value system of people that are in show business in Southern California, if there's a barometer for true somnambulistic mind control, the center point of that would be in Los Angeles, where I am currently. So it is a strange phenomena that we're dealing with now, for sure.
Right. Well, in terms of the psychological problems here, we've referred a lot to this cognitive dissonance thing, and it occurs to me that that's probably one of the big issues to tackle. If we're capable somehow of deprogramming people in general, and it's not like you can just go, okay, here's all the information you need one-on-one. I mean, it's kind of like educating somebody from high school, okay? You know, you start high school and you go through several years, you know, and you come out with your little piece of paper that means nothing, which you can't get a job for unless you pay for a massive institution to educate you with a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't matter, and get another piece of paper that doesn't mean anything, which you can't get a job for, and then you go home and live with your parents and continue playing Xbox, as you did when you first started high school.
Right. I would... When I first got into radio, my goal of the radio was to do sanctioned mind control. That was the point. That's the reason I got on radio. I initially was being interviewed regarding how I was getting people out of debt. But the means to do the counterproduct of sanctioned entrainment. That's another phrase we could say for mind control is sanctioned entrainment, which means the same type of sanctioned entrainment that people go into when they watch a film, not television. Those are two separate mediums, two different effects. The only way to unscramble that is to do what I did when I was on radio, is the study of media ecology and media studies. It's basically the forcing people to go inward and look at their own human perceptions, understand them, understanding what value is, how people interact with media, and does that impede or enhance our chances of survival. So when I would deal people either live or privately, I would go through their senses to help them make sense of their senses, to understand what technology does to the senses before they go and consume and make value judgments and react to information they're receiving online or in the printed word or in the printed book. I would examine with them and on air many times the effects of that technology on their understanding and on their own human behavior. Because the only way to look at news now is to do it through the study of the medium in which you're either accepting it or processing it. Like we're in the radio medium right now, which is still one of the best ways of projecting information. But since we're discarnate right now, we're not attached to our bodies, we're distorting time, we're leaving a digital footprint of foreverness, we're in the issues of simultaneity and so forth. This is the way to look at news today, because if you just read it for face value in the medium in which it's received to you, you're not going to be getting much information. And when we finally examine it, because all of this was initiated by Marsh McLuhan and Neil Postman a long time ago, the examination of the medium in the message and how people are going to process and react to the introduction of new technology into the mosaic of sensory stimulus. Because you're in the business of moving information. That's what you do. You move information from one place to another. Some people are listening to you just acoustically. Some people are maybe listening to YouTube and seeing visual stimulus. Some people may see you on camera. When you're in a two-dimensional space where you're on camera and you're acoustic, the information that you're going to be broadcasting or casting out to catch changes, and it changes in different cultures. So when I was on radio discussing the banking and all these issues having to do with sanctioned mind control, which is what I was doing, because I would often give disclaimers at the top of the hour that, yes, I'm not responsible for the effects of the communication that I'm going to be establishing here on this broadcast, nor am I liable for the effects that it will do after I'm off the air, since all of my digital footsteps are forever digitized. So that was I was doing quite well on radio for a while, providing that service to help people kind of defragment. Because if you're going to take care of your body, you need to take care of your mind, which means you need to have some type of diet of the mind. And a diet of the mind means understanding how your senses work, making sense of your senses, and then releasing the stimulus of those senses in a healthy fashion. And what I mean by that is doing the media fast and unplugging, getting away from TV, getting away from print, getting away from any forms of communication that fill in the resonating interval between the interplay of senses that make up and put us in a state of entrainment, i.e. mind control. So you have to go backwards doing that, and that's what I was doing on radio. That was the primary interest. The effect of money, hypothecation of money under light speed, new energy systems coming in, that was secondary. It was always the assessment of the news rather than the message of the news.
I was just thinking about this as well. Can mind control be used to help people free their minds? And that's pretty much what you're doing, isn't it, James?
Yes, that's exactly right. Because when I was dealing with some of the post-victims of MKUltra in other programs, and not some people outside of those programs that just had intense trauma, you had to be able to go in inwardly, find out what happened without telling them. They don't need to go backwards to go forwards. That's a myth that's been made up all over the place, actually. It's the psychiatrists and psychologists, they're making sense of the senses, too, by labeling those senses. We're at a completely, totally different space in how people process information now. So now, as I've made, I know you guys have joked back and forth, you and Randy or whatever, you can be texting while you're typing, while you're listening, while the TV is on, while you're eating dinner, and while you're talking.
We're doing it right now, actually.
Exactly. Okay, there we go. There we go. We're multitasking between multi-environments in a completely different locations all over the world in a now, in a moment, in a now, in a moment from now. So it's an amazing era that we're in.
Well, it's an era, but I don't think it's spelt the same, because somebody was telling me the other day that it's kind of like we're thinking forward and thinking back and thinking all around all the time, and in so doing, we actually miss the moments themselves. And I don't know exactly how to quantify that, except to maybe use music making as an example. Like, a lot of musicians, they write songs, and then they come up with a riff or something like that, and then piece the song together. Me and my friend Mike, we never write. We never do anything. He just starts playing, and I just start singing, and we record what we do, and then listen back to it, and if there's anything good in it, then we rework it and then turn it into a song, kind of thing. That's the process. In so doing, because we're not, shall we say, overthinking the creation of the music, we enjoy it in the moment when we do it, and then look upon it in retrospect afterwards.
Right, so you have your own biofeedback loop.
That's right, and depending on how much I've drank that night, a biofeedback loop too.
Right, good. Nothing mad with mixing your pleasures.
If you say so, you know, horses for courses, whatever floats your boat, tickles your pickle, or other, you know, appropriate rhyme. The question I have, really, is in terms of actually solving the banking cartel problem, who the hell is going to be in a position to enforce this? Okay, because the enforcement arm was basically the first thing the bankers go after to prevent themselves from being brought to justice. Haven't they corrupted the judges and the police forces and things of that nature, whether by hook or by crook or by mafia connections or something of that nature? Who exactly can you go to and say, hey, these guys who run the world are really, really nasty and naughty, we need to bring them to justice, when they own the justice system and anybody who would enforce it?
That's a very good point. At every gigantic international money transaction, now this was told to me by somebody that does massive volumes of transactions from point A to point B, billions actually. And I spoke to him, this was a while ago, and he said, you know, James, you got to understand that at every point of transaction like this, there's a gun at the other end. That's the real world. There's a gun at the other end. And I listened to it, and I'm like, well, of course. No wonder. Because how the hell are we supposed to clean up this mess when everybody can be bought? That's the problem. People can be bought. They can be compromised. They can be bought. They can be misdirected, betrayed. I personally don't understand, and I've said this over and over again, privately and publicly, why doesn't they just go? They don't just go track down Dick Cheney and arrest him. What's the problem? We got 50 SEALs that would do it probably tonight. But why doesn't that happen? Why aren't these people being put on display and be forced to go through trial like the Nuremberg trial? Why isn't that happening?
I can explain.
I don't know,
actually. You know why bad guys don't get assassinated? Because only a good guy would want to see them assassinated. And good guys just generally aren't assassins by trade. And
yeah.
And it's like, this is the corruption problem that we're dealing with, right? And I saw this a very interesting presentation the other day on a TED Talk. And it says, the seven processes that grease the slippery slope of evil. It was a psychologist who came up with these. Mindlessly taking the first small step. Dehumanization of others. De-individuation of self or anonymity, like if you wear a mask or something so nobody can tell who you are. Diffusion of personal responsibility. Oh, I was ordered to do it. Blind obedience to authority. Repeat. uncritical conformity to group norms. And then lastly, passive tolerance of evil through inaction or indifference. Now, each of these seven steps we've all done from time to time. But we haven't been corrupted by evil. I used to have a job looking after autistic kids, where I was given basically free rein to do whatever I wanted with these kids. No training, no oversight. And obviously the kids had no power or anything. And I actually just feared what I might become in an environment like that and had to quit my job because I saw that there was potential for abuse or doing something wrong because there was no checks and balances in the job position. I knew that. I know that I'm corruptible. I know that I can be passed into evil. And, you know, this is the reason why I hold a check and balance of myself constantly and try to... I don't know how exactly to hold a check and balance over other people. I think that's why we're given free will, because we choose to mindlessly take that first small step to evil, don't we? We don't just...
I agree. I definitely agree.
This is the problem.
Free will is a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing, but unfortunately it gets misused. And people don't know that freedom comes with responsibility, not the other way around. You don't become free and then automatically you have to become responsible. You have to become responsible first in order to earn your freedom.
I agree, absolutely. It's funny, when you bring that up, a close friend of mine was the late Russell Means, and most people in America, any decent education know who he was, the most important messages he's brought to the public as an American Indian leader was the fact that that freedom and liberty, those were American Indian principles that were adopted later by the white man and formed into the Constitution. That personal liberty, that was their idea. And look where they are today. However, I can tell you that freedom is always going to be in style. It's going to be very, very shortly. You're going to see a rise of the American Indian people coming to the forefront. I know about it. I know exactly what they're doing. They're changing the entire banking structure as we speak. They are involved in advanced technologies, and they understand that freedom, that's their main internal value, as well as the earth, protecting the earth. So I agree.
This reminds me of a quote by Chief Sitting Bull. I think it was, when the white man came, our society worked like this. The women take care of the children all day while the men go fishing. And then when the men come home, the women cook dinner and then we make love to them all night. Only the white man is stupid enough to think he can improve on that.
Exactly. Exactly. No, that's exactly right. Having spent a lot of time with the Lakota people. I was recently in South Dakota where I met with all the Ogla Lakota tribes as well as their spiritual leaders in private meetings where they were getting ready to change their financial systems, introductions of new technologies, eco-friendly technologies to the Republic of Lakota and Standing Rock and so forth. And it was interesting to see how they interact with each other in their government proceedings. And many of the tribal elders there were in and out of the White House all the time. They are on a first-name basis with the president. With President Obama this year, is involved with Standing Rock Tribe, and it's the Standing Rock Tribe and another tribe, accessory tribe to them, that really put their foot down and said, you know, we're not going to be having this pipeline. And they have actually the chief of Chairman Dave, who is the head of the city council, or the Standing Rock Council, or tribal council, his relative works at the White House, and they are in a very, very critical situation because the president is supposedly going to veto this pipeline that threatens all the sacred territory through the Black Hills in South Dakota. That is number one on their main agenda right there. So their ideas of freedom and liberty are completely unbeknownst to most of the public. They have to fight for everything they have all the time. And speaking of Sitting Bull, I did meet the great-granddaughter of Sitting Bull and spent some time with her. And what I learned just totally freaked me out when I was sitting next to her, because I was introduced to her by somebody else, and she looked me square in the face and said, James, can you help me? And I said, with what? And she proceeded to tell me that her family had been kidnapped, and that because of the low poverty issues with much of the American Indian people, most of their children are being taken away from them. And most of the country has no idea that it's going on in Child Protective Services and what's behind that. The banks are behind it and so forth. So there, I learned a lot going into the territory of the American Indians, not only about freedom, but about law, about how they discuss and have their interrelations with the white man, and exactly how they intend to survive, because that's how they view it. Survival. They deal with it every day. So it was a very educational experience meeting with all their government elders.
Mm. Randy, you got something to say?
Well, what he just brought up there, the area of law, one of the things that I don't think most people understand is that nothing that we've talked about tonight in terms of the economic system globally is technically lawful. They cloak that because they use the term legal, and they have redefined laws. They basically operate off codes and statutes and rules, but they don't actually operate under what we would call true law, which is basically even international law is premised on a very common set of standards that have to do with morality. We're in a time right now of what I call high contrast. You might notice that the evil have gotten glaringly evil, and that the good among us are, like us on this call tonight, perplexed, somewhat angry, and searching for solutions. And I think right now the planet is entertaining this because eventually the source of evil cannot sustain itself. It is parasitic. It does not create. And it relies on the compliance of the majority of the planet. And if we just, you know, we follow the tangent of the 100 monkey theory, shows like this and getting out the kind of information that we're talking about and having these kinds of discussions is in itself an effective solution, because we're raising the frequency level of the communication on the planet. So, you know, when I get into a state of despair about things that are around us, I have to remind myself that all of this is just a return back to equilibrium, that things in the universe do tend back towards equilibrium, and that we're just simply in the sway right now of extreme imbalance.
Mm. Things are always going to get worse before they get better, but the night is darkest just before the dawn. Now, the thing that I was just thinking about, and James, you kind of triggered this thought. I've been thinking every now and again for a while, and then dismiss the thought because it's tyrannical and it's horrible and it should never be implemented, is straight up murder of the bankers, right? I just think about this. There's no law. There's no courts for these people. There's no law for these people. They control them all. There's only actually one recourse, is if they're just walking down the street and somebody notices them, pulls out their legally issued pistol that they're licensed for and everything, and kills them, right? It's the only way there's actually going to be any real progress in terms of that solution. That was the thought that I was having. And then the other concept is, it's not even possible to do that whatsoever because they've got all these security around them and blah, 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 blah. And not to mention the amount of intelligence apparatus that is out there. Any plot that was being hatched in order to attack any of these people would quite likely be red flagged for analysis, analyzed, and then you'd be eliminated. See? They've got it all stitched up. So when we talk about solutions, it really does come down to the use of force, does it not? Because let's take about George Orwell's definition of totalitarianism. And by the way, just a proviso, I'm not advising that you go out and try to kill the elite. That is illegal. And it's not good. And I'm not sure if it would solve anything either, because it would just be like some kind of a weird cataclysmic game of Jenga where a worse piece winds up having to be slotted into that part. Somebody who's a worse dictator than the current dictator that just got taken out. You see what I'm saying? You just make matters worse, maybe. But anyway, George Orwell's definition of totalitarianism: a society living by and for continuous warfare, in which the ruling caste have ceased to have any real function but succeed in clinging to power through force and fraud. How is it that you can oppose force with words? You cannot. You die. Many have tried. I don't know the solution to this. I don't.
I am with you 100% on that as well, because I don't think there's a person out there, if they knew what was really going on and what the banks have done and what we've kind of agreed to participate in by voluntary compliance, that if somebody did take out bankers, because everybody knows that all these bankers are committing suicide, supposedly.
Including one of them by shooting himself in each temple 6 times with a nail gun.
Yeah, yeah.
He really hated his life, you know?
I have to get up and do this again. Wait a minute. I think on that, not 2 nails, but 6 should do it. Don't you think?
Yeah, 6. The first half it doesn't just wasn't enough, darling. Just complete the set, you know.
Maybe. Exactly. That type of stuff. Yeah, I think about that all the time. One time I think I said in some interview or somewhere, I said, "Look, all these guys coming back from that have the deep post-traumatic stress disorder from battle stress and so forth. They come home, they're totally debt. They don't even own their homes. They got collectors at them. They can't get a job. They have a problem functioning. A lot of these guys, I'm surprised, because I always thought they're going to snap. They're just going to get pissed off at one of these guys, and they're going to take them down. And that may have happened already. I don't know, but it seems to me that they have the law. They can buy anybody. They can do whatever they want. They got everything stitched up. So that's a good point. I don't know the answer to that, honestly.
It will come down one day to a revolution is basically the only logical conclusion that you can draw from this. The only way to remove a ruling class that holds all the keys to power from power is to completely overthrow it altogether. what's problematic is that nobody talks about what you're going to do after the revolution. What kind of society you're actually going to set up. How exactly are you going to prevent corrupt scumbaggery individuals with more money than God and more influence than Jesus take control?
I totally agree with that. Yeah, nobody, they don't have a plan. They haven't figured out a plan to do that, so until a plan is firmly established and agreed upon multiply, I mean, there's a play at hand, as we've discussed here, to do that, but its execution, I question it. I have not, my faith in the human condition, it's questionable in terms of bringing to justice what has been done. I mean, there's so much blood on their hands, it's mind-boggling.
I don't know if you've ever gone into business or into conflict with a person who's a psychopath, but in my experience, you can't bring them down, right? They just basically destroy your life instead, and because you play by rules, you have things like morality and what have you. You can't go and kill their children in order to get to them, but they can and will do it to you. So you sit back and you try to ignore them, and you watch helplessly as they continue to destroy the lives of others while posing as their savior.
See, Vinny, I am so glad that you brought up that point, because that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where the rubber meets the road, exactly. Because for people that are the insiders that are aware or have a hands-on issue with fixing a lot of these financial problems, they feel that way. I mean that's exactly right. Exactly right.
So the question is it self? Does it come down to self-sacrifice? I was speaking to a man down in the South Island, and his daughter was basically taken by these child services pedophiles and what have you, and they were giving her to these gang members on the public holidays and things like that, you know, Easter and Christmas, they wanted her. And what was... the thing, I went down there and covered his story so that he wouldn't have to tell his story to people again, because the problem with being traumatized is that you have to tell people all the time how somebody traumatized you.
Yeah. And you did him a noble gesture. That's a noble gesture you did him.
But,
well done.
But directly after that, he messaged me in saying that there's a cop, a pedophile cop, who was caught filming a teenage girl with an iPhone, a police iPhone, and he said he was going to go and breach the suppression order and name him in public. And I said to him, I probably wouldn't do that myself, because I know what's going to happen. You'll get done for all of these BS crimes of like, oh, you know, he exposed a criminal. What an evil person. Let's take him to court instead of the criminal.
Yeah.
But I added on the proviso that if you did so, you'd be doing the right thing, as the right thing is usually the hardest thing to do. And it's only through somebody's personal choice to sacrifice themselves upon the altar of truth and freedom that any progress can be made. And he did.
I agree.
And the exact same thing that I said would happen to him did. And it doesn't make me feel any better about it.
Yeah, it's weird, because where the rubber meets the road is exactly that point that you're talking about. There's been some incidents reported in the U.S. where the fathers of daughters who have fathers have caught pedophiles with their children, and on the spot torture them or shoot them dead. And when the police arrive, they let them go. They don't even use the courts. They bypass all of that because they discovered that their child was being abused. And there's like a spiritual higher authority that comes in, and rule of law, and everything's off the table. And it's just man to man. It's a natural thing to want to protect your own children from something like that. So personally, for me, if I found out that, you know, I had children and I walked in on that, I'm sorry. It's over for you. Lights out. I have no problem with it. But there's other people that won't do that. And I probably would not do that. But that's what it comes down to, is that point at which where are you going to draw your line in the sand? And what I see in the local culture where I am is it's such disassociation from each other and disconnect that most people, if you're laying in the street bleeding, this is, I speak on behalf of Los Angeles, nobody's going to come help you except the people, the authority figures that are protected by law so that nobody gets sued. It's a weird place for, you know, where are you going to place your involvement? Where are you going to place your value system? And what move are you going to make at that moment? But now, that's great that you hate that guy. I'm glad. See, that's a cognitive, aware person to give the gift to that you did and stop the impediment of trauma by making that guy say his story over and over and over again. That's a very wise view.
Yeah, well, I told him that if you want to ever tell your story again, send them a frickin' link, bro. It takes a hell of a lot less time. And I was just thinking about this, like, somebody was posted a question in a Facebook group the other day. If your country went to war, would you sign up and go and fight? And I was just like, you know, no country's really gone to war for a good reason, not for a very long time. Unless you count astronomical debt to the bankers who finance both sides, of course. So if anyone here thinks of dying for their country, just wait till you're invaded. Otherwise, you're dying so that your nation becomes a slave to criminals. Nothing more. And we are fighting a war against criminals, and each army has a number of different companies, battalions, specialists, etc. There are propagandists during warfare. I mean, if we were to take this analogy literally, that would place us squarely within the pro-freedom propaganda movement. Now, propaganda in itself is like the word manipulation. It depends upon the connotation you're using. You can use black propaganda, as it's called. There's no race implied there, which is to use lies to convince people of a certain point of view. Whereas white propaganda is using the truth to achieve the same end. And it occurs to me that in this movement, there are lots of people. There are people who are really good at reading documents. I'm not one of those people. Okay? There are people who are really good at, let's say, for example, training others how to grow food, etc., or blogging. Whatever your skill set is, just don't do nothing. Because it's doing nothing this entire time that has got us into this irreversible, the seemingly irreversible situation in the first place. But yeah, it does come down to frickin' self-sacrifice at the end of the day, doesn't it? There's no free lunch. You know, me personally, I mean, I serve out of moral obligation, not ego. I require neither rewards nor thanks and do not have to justify myself to anyone. Least of all, those who want to only help themselves and would leave all others to suffer and die because of their refusal to embody the true spirit of self-sacrifice.
Yeah, I agree. There's a whole lot of people such as yourself that are standing up now. That's the good part of things that are going on, because the fact that we're even having this dialogue, because most people that are faced with complete, total corruption and tyranny, a good portion of them out here, they don't even want to get involved. And we're at a critical point here in the U.S. where cognitive liberty isn't free anymore. Thought crime, everything's racist. It's a complete, everybody, they're media casualties out here because they've all bought and are believing the production being fed to them about dividing everybody out here in this class warfare. What, and that class warfare as the misdirective method of operations for the financiers to set that up. We just participate in it. So I'm always making sure that I stay away from any information overload in participating in any of the media environments at all, just to keep some sort of healthy level of participation, you know?
I heard a comedian once say that I don't watch television for two reasons. I'm intelligent, and I have a temper.
Right. Yeah, no, I used to be able to watch it and did the same thing like many people do and sit in front of a piece of machinery for 6 or 7 hours and then often have it playing in the background just to have a friend in the house if nobody was there, you know, just leave the television running. And then one day I had this total shift in value. I'm like, why am I spending my time in front of a machine all for 5 hours, 6 hours a day? Isn't there anything better to do? And ever since then, I can't really watch it anymore. I can't really do it. I can't. I don't want to anymore now.
Well, it takes about 30 seconds for it to sucker you in the, you know, you sit there and you're like, alpha waves, ooh, beta waves. You know.
Ooh. Yeah, what they're doing now is they're amplifying the sensory experience. We're coming out with new screens, HD. They're going to come out with
4K, four times the quality,
yeah,
of HD. I mean, I was just thinking about this the other day. You know, you go in and you watch a 3D movie and you've got the glasses on there. I'm just wondering, because every time you look at something or you hear something or anything, whatever, it has an effect on the mind in some way, shape or form, whether it's sometimes it's subliminal and sometimes it's actually a very real reactionary thing. Usually when you tell people something they don't want to hear, or you tell them something incredibly inspiring, then you actually produce this physical response, an emotional response, if you will. And it occurs to me that the difficulty here in explaining to people why you need to turn off the television is that they're addicted to it. You can't
right.
look at the subject of mind control without also discussing the propensity towards addiction towards it. Now, Randy, did you have something to say there?
Well, I was just going to point out that we're at a very dangerous point with that, too. I mean, look at Google Glass and Oculus Rift right now and what's going on. I was just looking at the specs on Oculus Rift. These glasses basically will place a high-definition image moving in full 3D into the space of your field of vision, circumferential, and it will be constantly streaming and scanning images. We are dangerously close to the place where we will just simply become machines watching machines at that point. That will be the reboot of human. That will be human 3.0, and it will not be human the way we've known it in the past.
Your reality will be a technological simulation coming at you the same way it was projected in Minority Report when Tom Cruise walked into the store. The store came at him. So people, they won't be able to tell the difference between normal reality and their virtual reality. We're already pretty much at that space right now. And with nanotechnology and what they're getting ready to do, Oculus Rift, things of that nature, that's going to suck people in, and they're going to be completely cut off from society. And their value system will be virtual value system, which will take up most people's time. So people will go into tubes, and that's how they're going to. That's the future. It's already.
Well, it is effectively the singularity. That's what they're talking about.
Yep. And people will walk right into it by consent. It's already. They've been looking away for it. I see people right now. I actually went and saw somebody using Oculus Rift, and I could just tell in the first 2 minutes by their physical body language that they are sold. They are sold, and that's what they're going to be spending most of their time doing. For sure.
But, you know, they could – I'll turn this around a little bit. You can take the desire for that type of experience, and you can go into transcendental states. You can access that using the things of nature, such as ayahuasca, peyote, and things like that. And then you go into an immersive experience, which is actually natural to your biology, natural to your energetic rhythms. And you are not circumventing your own natural state. It basically is a completely different type of experience. I think what we're seeing now is the synthesis of human consciousness. Where
I would disagree, Randy. I think we're seeing the senselessness of human consciousness. But go on.
No, it's a synthesis. You're right. So my point is that we can choose to go back to the things in nature and connect with that, or we will go increasingly towards being assimilated by the Borg.
That's exactly right. I would agree with that. We're at the crossroads for that right now. Yeah, the future, the Vinnie Eastwood show is going to be experienced completely differently in the next couple of years. If you decide to continue on, the way people will process your information and the audience that you've created.
Vinnie is positioned for this. He is a video artist.
Yeah, so he's set up to be the artist in the media environment, influencing with integrity.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit something here. The reason why I got into this whole gig is because I want to mind control people into realizing that they're under mind control and then free their minds from it. I mean, look.
All three of us have that in common.
If your existence is not based on some form of irony, then you're simply not in tune with the natural environment, okay?
Right. Yeah. So you're the ant. We're all three of us are antiviruses for the virus.
Yeah, but we're not like Norton Antivirus, where we make you buy us so in order to protect you from a virus, and in the process we give you a virus for which you need protection from. You know,
right?
If anything, we're more like the AIDS virus of the. Wait a second, that's not a good reference.
It's certainly grim.
Right, well, in that case, we are the AIDS virus. We are the auto neuron disrupting commentators.
It's psychic aid. Psychic aid. We're providing psychic aid.
Yeah. I mean, just like that episode in South Park, everybody should get AIDS.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Everyone.
Myself and Christopher Green came up with financial aids or fades, and in order to protect your country from it, you need to wear an alternative media condom.
Right, that's a good point too. Very good.
Practice safe financial transactions.
Amen. Exactly. Good metaphor. Very good metaphor and great advertising.
Yeah, because of course once you've got financial aids, there's just no cure.
Exactly. Very good. So, what are in the culture of New Zealand? How is the culture there in terms of the awareness level of what's going on? I mean, what's the attitude in the streets? I'm just curious.
One might argue that New Zealand has culture, but the attitude in the street is. I really can't gauge it, actually. I haven't really done a vox popular. I mean, and of course my social circles, because I don't like being called names, abused, or talk to people with no intellectual capacity. The predominant view that I have, basically, it doesn't reflect the general public. But if you can look at gauges of general public activity, for example, voting, you would say that 50% of eligible voters want to vote for their own tyranny, and at least 30% of eligible voters don't want to participate in it whatsoever. So what's happening essentially is you've got a massive mind-controlled group of people that are almost beyond saving at roughly 70% of the general public. And I made a joke about this the other day, actually. Somebody told me that there's this star, this really, really huge star that's like 8 light years away from Earth. And it's incredibly massive and incredibly dense, 80,000 times denser than diamond. Almost as dense as 99% of the general public. Almost.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Right.
You can't swear on radio.
Right.
I just did.
And
there was also another joke that I came up with, considering we were talking about us being some kind of sexually transmitted intellectual infection. Did you know that venereal diseases came from a distant star cluster as well? The Crab Nebula. All right.
Good.
They traveled thousands
of... This type of stuff should be the opening remarks on all your transmissions. This is where you start first. You do a major pattern interrupt, go straight into VD, all that type of stuff. Good idea. Yeah. I already endorsed your show for sure now.
Yeah. And they traveled so far, you know, millions of light years from the Crab Nebula, which is why they're apparently so unwilling to leave.
Right. Good. You're the first guy that can mix VD with banking and do it very well.
Well, far as I know, a lot of the banking families actually have a long-running history of rampant VD.
Yeah. I remember
seeing somebody on radio go nuts about it, actually, and said that basically the reason why everything appears so crazy is because the crazy people that have control over all the crazy apparatus of power and control have VD, which has driven them even more crazy than they originally were, you know?
It's the perfect cycle.
Yeah, no, it's just totally like hemorrhoids, VD, diarrhea, all of
On that wonderful note, we have entered the show. I'd like to thank you very much.
I feel the same way. There's nothing matter with potty humor. We call it how we see it. That's how it goes.
At the end of the day, it's all about the flush.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why I call myself a douchebag reporter, because it's my job to flush out those ridiculously dirty cracks in society. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at the always lascivious VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Thank you very much for listening.